Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hi, and welcome to Coffee and Pearls, 15 minutes of wisdom for Catholic moms. I'm Sterling Jaquith, and as you may have guessed, my big exciting news is that Coffee and Pearls is now part of the Breadbox Media family. Breadbox Media is basically a group of Catholic podcasts. I love the work that's being done over there. Lisa Hendy's podcast is there. Chloe Langer's podcast, Letters to Women, is there. There's so many great ones, several from priests. And they're coming out with an app soon, which will just be great because then you can have one app for all of your favorite Catholic podcasts. And they're acquiring more and more all the time. So I'm excited to be part of that group. I really love what they're doing and trying to get more Catholic podcasts out to people and really just helping enable good Catholics to have shows, because I think this is one of the best ways that we as busy Americans can digest information. You know, a lot of us are running around, but we can plop some earphones in and listen to a podcast while we're doing something else, and that's really just one of the reasons I'm such a huge fan of podcasts. So for my very first episode for them, I thought it would be great to do my conversion story. So I'm going to do it in two parts. I'm going to do the first part today, which is how I went from being kind of an agnostic, no nothing, don't believe in Jesus, all those opinions, all the way to being a pretty conservative Protestant. And then in the next episode, I will talk about how I went from Protestantism to Catholicism. So I was raised with pretty much no religion. I remember when I was 8 years old, I went to a Christian horse camp, which is brilliant, by the way. Send your kids to Christian horse camp. My brother went too. There was like a girls' one and a boys' one, and he just loved it. He just thought it was so great. And it was great because what they would do is they would walk you through and show you all the horses and you'd get to see them, which was very exciting. But then they would put you in a room and make you do a Bible study before you got to ride the horses. And so, you know, we ended up learning a lot about Jesus. I think it was the first time that I had really held a Bible and flipped through it on my own. And the camp counselors were all teens who had had pretty big conversion stories. So I remember one of them, maybe she had been on drugs or something, like had one of those incredibly sensational conversion stories. And it was so real and raw. And I understood that even at eight. And I just saw the love in her eyes for this new life and for Jesus. And I remember going home after that camp and asking my mom if I could have a Bible. And so she did buy me a Bible. I did have one at that point. And I think for a little while I flipped through it, but it's awfully hard to maintain a relationship with Jesus kind of on your own with a Bible as an 8-year-old with no one guiding you. So that definitely faded away. But I do have fond memories of that experience. And it was very powerful. So, you know, I wouldn't discount planting seeds. You know, maybe you have some children in your life whose parents aren't religious, but you could get them to send them to some sort of quasi-religious camp. And, you know, that can be really impactful for kids to even just have a small exposure. And they may not have this huge come to Jesus moment right then that lasts for the rest of their lives, but seeds planted are important. And, you know, the Holy Spirit is with those children. And so I just want to say small things matter. Then later, you know, when I was in high school, my mom had started going to church, and I would go with her sometimes, and this was kind of just an evangelical church, but I wasn't really that into the youth group. You know, they seemed to be kind of cliquey, and it wasn't my kind of crowd. At that point, I was the, you know, green Doc Martens wearing punk rock listening kind of kid who wore a lot of black, so the Christian evangelical youth group was just not really my jam. And so that didn't really speak to me at that time in my life. And none of my friends were religious, but I had really nice friends. I mean, we weren't doing drugs. We weren't getting into trouble. I had nice friends. And so at that point, it didn't seem like Jesus was an important part of the equation for life happiness. I didn't feel, I think at that point, that, you know, religion was missing in my life, or that it would be better with some sort of religion. So then I went off to college, and perhaps ironically, I went to a Jesuit college. And I'm kicking myself about that now, because I lived literally a block away from the chapel on campus, and I could have gone every day. I don't have a lot of regrets in my life, but man, I just wish I could redo college and go to that beautiful chapel every day. But I managed to go throughout all of college without ever going to church. And the one thing that I remember about being on that campus was how many people that I knew from classes or from organizations that I was part of that didn't seem religious at all, and yet they would all come out with ashes on their forehead on Ash Wednesday. And that was kind of confusing to me because, you know, at this point I thought, well, intelligent people aren't religious, right? You know, that's just a crutch for people that need, you know, extra community support just to make it through their lives. So it didn't make sense to me that these people that I knew who I thought were smart and also didn't seem to be living lives that appeared to be very Christian would take the time to go to this weird Ash Wednesday service, which I'm sure at that time I had no idea what that was, but I knew it was Catholic and religious. And so it was just confusing to me how many people went, and yet, you know, it didn't seem like they were Catholic in any other way. That's not surprising to me now, but, you know, it was just confusing, I'd say. And one of my first experiences with Catholicism was, you know, going to the school and seeing that. So then everybody who goes to the school has to take a theology class, and I took a theology class called Women in the New Testament, and it was run by a nun, and she was very nice. And I remember thinking, like, oh, this nun is lovely and nice, and I had a positive experience with her, and I really enjoyed her class. It was very insightful, and I remember coming away thinking, well, the Catholic Church actually has a lot of respect for women, you know, and here I was in feminist Seattle, which is a very thick liberal place, and this university also just happens to be in the gay district of Seattle, so it has a large homosexual population. And I feel like, you know, Catholicism kind of has a bad reputation, so it was surprising to me to be in this class with this woman who talked about how much the Catholic Church, you know, loves and honors women throughout their whole religion, and then specifically in the New Testament. So that was a positive experience, but not a moving one in any way. I didn't start going to Mass. I just had to check that off as a requirement. So graduated from college. At this point, I had been writing and competing with business plans, and I wrote a business plan for creating a dog training franchise. At the time, there were no dog training franchises, and I thought a business person needs to do that because dog training people are kind of weird. They will admit that, and they're not great at business. And so I saw a huge opportunity to do that, and I actually won a lot of money to do that. So I started a dog training studio in Seattle, and it was really fun. I mean, I think if you had asked me for most of my life what my dream job would be, I would say playing with puppies all day. And that is exactly what I got to do. And I made a lot of money doing it, and it was really fun, except that I basically worked every single day. And when you're boarding dogs, not only do you work every day, but you work every hour of every day. And they're just with you all the time. And I remember paying for a vacation that I ended up not being able to take. I just gave it to one of my friends because I had booked a really big deal and I just needed to stay home and do that. I trained these puppies at my home usually for a month at a time. And anyway, I found myself, you know, living in Seattle. I was in this adorable house, this cute craftsman house, and we put a pool in the backyard, and it was just the coolest, right? I mean, I was out of college, and my friends would come over, and we'd play with the puppies and hang out in the pool, and that's really, really awesome. That's pretty fun. And yet I would find myself kind of laying in bed at the end of the night feeling empty. And that's, of course, not surprising, because a life without Jesus is empty, no matter how much money you make, no matter how many friends you have, no matter how many puppies you have to cuddle along the way. And I was kind of at this crossroads with the business where I either needed to raise some money to open up another location or just pack it in. And at the time, my mom, two things happened. One, she ended up having a pretty big surgery where she's going to be laid up for 6 weeks. And it was pretty clear that she was about to get divorced from her second husband. And so one night I was, again, laying in bed, and I felt very strongly that I heard this voice say, "Sterling, you need to go home." And that is surprising to me because I didn't want to go home. I really liked Seattle. I didn't want to go back to Vancouver, Washington, which is a smaller town outside Portland. You know, and I like my mom, but I had moved out when I was 17. Maybe earlier than that. Maybe I was 15. So I hadn't lived with her for a long time. And even though we get along, the idea of going home and living with your mom is not always great. And so I felt this, I don't know, it was just like this voice. It was like an idea that was planted in my head that was not my own. And so I said, yes, I'm going to do that. Later, I would discover that one of my number one spiritual gifts is faith. I just have this ability to just, I don't know, hear something and go all in and just believe it. Whereas my husband's the opposite, right? He's like, give me 3 academic journals and some church father works to prove that that's true. he needs a lot of convincing, where I just tend to go, yep, Jesus said that, let's go. So this was one of the first experiences of that I don't know, I just heard something and I felt very strongly that I needed to listen. So I packed up my house, I closed my business. I went home to help my mom. I told her it would be for a year. I said, I'll hang out with you for a year and help you get back on your feet. I ended up getting a job at a web design company. I had done that before the dog training thing. And in the years that I had been gone at college, my mom had had this huge conversion experience. She had found a new church, kind of like a Calvary Chapel church, if you're familiar with that. It's a very kind of conservative Protestant church. The way that they teach is that they go through the Bible in order, which is important to them, especially because instead of teaching topically, maybe about forgiveness and then kind of jumping all over the place, they really just dive into the Word. They'll stick through the whole, you know, book of Mark and go through line by line and just talk about it. So she had been going to this church, and I came home and she starts bugging me about it. Nobody likes to listen to their mom. So I said, it's fine. It's great for you. And I had seen how great it was for her. It had really given her a lot of self-confidence and a lot of stability in her life and a great community. And she had lost some weight. And I was feeling really happy for her. But, you know, in my mind, she was kind of a broken person that needed church. And I think church is great for that. But it wasn't for me. And so then she asked me if I would build a website for the pastor of her church. And my mom, who was a single mom and raised me and made a tremendous amount of sacrifices for me, never asked me for anything. And so I said, okay, I will do that. So I would go over on Wednesdays to this pastor's house, and I would sit with him, and I would help him build this website. And then afterwards, I would have dinner with him and his wife. And they were the first example of a healthy marriage that I think I have ever seen, that I got to see in detail over and over and over again. And they looked so happy and peaceful, and their life wasn't easy. And so they would, you know, kind of share with me things that they were going through, but there was just this incredible peace about them and just a loveliness about their relationship. And I found myself so attracted to that, you know. And when Matthew Kelly says that people are always attracted to holiness, that's exactly what he's talking about. We can sense people who are close to God, and we want to be around them, and we want to be like them. And they, of course, started asking me questions about what I believed and what I wanted out of life. And I really appreciate that they didn't press me on things that I probably answered poorly. They would just kind of toss questions out there and let me stew on them for a little bit. And I can tell now that they were planting seeds. They were allowing me to come to Christ in my own time. And I think they knew that if they tried to shove it down my throat or pressure me, that I would have probably hightailed it out of there and left. And so over time, the short version is that they convinced me that Jesus was great. And I said, all right, I will join your club. And when I first decided to join their club, that's exactly the attitude I had about it. I looked around, and from a very reasonable and logical perspective, I said, you know, I think I might want to get married. And that was a new revelation for me after watching their marriage and being, I think, 23 at this point. Previously, I had no desire to get married. And I thought, but if I get married, I don't want to get divorced. And the chances of me getting divorced will go down significantly if I marry someone who believes in Jesus. Okay, that sounds good to me. And the likelihood that I could find someone who believes in Jesus will increase if I go to church. That ended up not being true, by the way, but it made sense to me at the time. So they also had some great Bible studies, and then they also had a group of women that were doing this weight loss program together. And both of those seemed really attractive to me, because here I was, and I was kind of lonely. Despite coming back to my hometown, all of my friends had moved away out of state to go to college, so I didn't really know anybody there anymore, which was funny. And so I remember sitting my dad down and telling him, all right, I'm going to do this church thing, but not really. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go because I'm going to get these things out of it. They've got a great community, but I just want you to know, like, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. It's just a tool. I think it's a healthy tool, and I'm going to use it for these healthy things that I want. That's how full of myself I was, to be honest. And so I started going to church, and I started going to these theology classes, and I joined this weight loss group, which was incredible. I should do a whole episode about that group someday. And of course, I met Jesus and fell in love with him, and that's really just what happens when you put yourself out there and you spend time reading the word and being in community together. They didn't have to trick me. The Holy Spirit moves people through these experiences. And it was really powerful, and I went all in. And I took more theology classes. That's one thing I really liked about that group. Perhaps ironically, they taught me a lot of reasons why I should not be Catholic, but we'll talk about that in the next episode. And it really changed my life. So here are five things that I want to recommend to you if there are people in your life that you want to lead to Christ. Okay? One, invite them over for a meal. That's it. People just are so lonely these days. Just invite them over. Heat something up. Buy a pizza. Make it simple. Don't clean your house. Keep the bar low. Just say, come on over. And just spend time with them. if Christ is part of your life, they will sense that peace and holiness in you, and it will be attractive to them. Number two, live a life of contentment, not happiness. Okay, we don't need to brush it up and say, oh, you know, when you love Jesus, everything's great. Everything's wonderful. In my opinion, since I've become Catholic, I think I've experienced a tremendous amount of suffering. But I think it's beautiful. And I want my contentment to shine through this happy acceptance. Not a resignation. I want people to see that even though things are really difficult for us right now, we believe that we are honoring God with every day. And this is the life that we want. So be content in your own life. And the people around you will be able to sense that. Number three, ask thoughtful questions, but don't press for answers. You know, I really appreciated this pastor and his wife. They would ask me big questions about why I thought marriage was important or what I wanted to accomplish with my life. Why did I choose this job? What were my 10-year plans? And why did I believe in God? Which, of course, I fumbled a lot of the religious questions and gave them a lot of sound bites that I probably learned through television and, I don't know, not Facebook back then, but something. And they didn't tell me I was wrong. They just didn't say anything. They just let me say those things out loud and then think about them. And I would think about them. I'd go home and think, that was kind of ridiculous. Or I would acknowledge to myself, that was kind of weak. I'm not sure that that was the strongest argument or that I really believe that. We say things that we don't believe all the time. Don't embarrass people, especially young people. Don't push them into a corner and bully them and make them feel bad or make them feel stupid. Sometimes I hear young people say things and I think, that was so stupid. But I would never say that because I will lose them. Okay? So ask them thoughtful questions. Don't press for answers. Number four, pray for them and give them space. We're not on a timetable here. I mean, I realize that we're in a battle for souls and anyone can die at any point. So there is a sense of urgency in that way. But again, nobody wants to feel rushed into this. Just pray that the Holy Spirit brings them many moments, plants many seeds. And then if it doesn't come from you, that it comes from someone else. Ask for wisdom. Holy Spirit, help me to say the right thing that this person needs to hear. Just pray for them and give them space. Entrust them to Mary. She will take care of them. People can sense when you're desperate. You know, we were very bad about hiding our emotions. So, you know, take your anxiety about their lack of religion, especially if this is someone in your family or a very close friend and you're, you know, actually worried about their soul. Just shelve that for a minute, give them to Mary, pray for them, and give them some space. Number five, encourage them to grow in non-religious ways. I think one of the reasons I came to form such strong relationships with the people at this church was because they felt like they were really interested in me, helping me achieve my goals. And one that I was vocal about was losing weight and meeting a nice Christian guy. And I would talk a lot about my job, which was full of people who were not believers. And it was a really kind of toxic environment. And we would talk through that. And I just felt like they cared about me more than just wanting me to join the church. You know, it wasn't like they were just trying to get me to be part of the club. They really cared about me, and they expressed that in ways that had nothing to do with going to church. And that made me feel very valued. People want to know that you care about them, and you can show them that by investing in them. So when you're looking at someone and you want so desperately to lead them to Christ, and I know how that feels, ask yourself, what does this person want, and can I help them get that? something totally unrelated to church. Invest in them. And they will wonder why you did that. All right? That is the first part of my conversion story and the five things I think you can do to lead people to Christ. Stay tuned for the next episode where I will talk about how I went from Protestantism to Catholicism. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee and Pearls, and have a blessed day.